You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On a mixtape just around the corner, did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like song, and my song's gon' break through like.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One. My name is Mark Daly, and it is Sunday, March 24th, 2024. Can you believe it? We're almost into April. That is shocking, to say the least. Where the heck did March go? But that means we are getting closer and closer to summer. Well, at least in the northern hemisphere we are. I know in the southern hemisphere, it's getting into fall. And from what I understand, especially in and around Melbourne, was had a lovely, lovely hot summer at times. So we've still got that to look forward to up here. And it was lovely and sunny today. But we're not here to talk about the weather. We're here to talk about the Australian Grand Prix and the fact Max didn't win for once. Insane. Just unbelievable stuff. We'll get into that in just a moment. First of all, I just want to give a quick shout out to the Race Weekend magazine. You can go and check them out at theraceweekend.com, and that is The Race, and weekend is WKND.com, and enter in my promo code ScuderiaPod at checkout to save a 10% on a year's subscription. And also head on over to racingexclusives.com for unique Formula One merchandise that comes with a certificate of authenticity. Be sure to check them out at racingexclusives.com. So yes, do not adjust your set. Do not try to do all those things, because Max Verstappen did not actually win the Australian Grand Prix that went this time yesterday at the beautiful Albert Park circuit in Melbourne, Australia. And I must say, I really am into these the timings for the first three races of the season so far. I mean, very, very friendly for those of us on the west coast of North America. You know, nice early starts for both of the races in the Middle East. And this one went at 9 p.m. Pacific time last night, which was just perfect for a Saturday night. Hey, we've got kids, so we're not going out anyways in my house, so might as well sit down and enjoy a Grand Prix, and we'll talk about all the action. So let's run it down at least. Pardon me. Let's run down the final race classification. It was a Ferrari 1-2. Carlos Sainz coming home in first place, 2.3 seconds ahead of his Ferrari teammate Charles Leclerc. Lando Norris getting onto the podium for McLaren in third. Oscar Piastri was fourth. Sergio Perez was fifth. No, I'm not saying that incorrectly. Then we had Lance Stroll for Aston Martin, Yuki Tsunoda for Racing Bulls. Fernando Alonso was demoted down to eighth after a 20-second penalty. We'll talk about that too. And then we have a pair of Haases in the top 10. Nico Hülkenberg and Kevin Magnussen coming home 9th and 10th for more points for the Haases. That is good for them. You know, they've scored points in the first several races. Alex Albon, racing with his teammates, a chassis, came home just outside of the points in P11. Danny Ricciardo, P12. Pierre Gasly, Valtteri Bottas, Zhou Guan Yu, Esteban Ocon. And then we had three drivers who did not finish. Oh, pardon me. So it was Pierre Gasly, Valtteri Bottas, Zhou Guan Yu, Esteban Ocon. And then the three cars that were not classified was George Russell, who was had that big shunt right at the very end there. Lewis Hamilton retired after 15 laps. And then Max Verstappen, the reigning world champion, out on lap three. So what does that mean for the Drivers' Championship? Now it's getting a little bit interesting. So we have Max Verstappen still on top, despite not scoring any points this weekend. The Red Bull driver has 51 points from three races. Charles Leclerc, only 4 points behind with 47. Sergio Perez is third with 46. Carlos Sainz is currently fourth with 40 points. So we'll see what happens, obviously, when we get through the next couple of races in China and Japan, and whether or not the race, or, you know, Max reestablishes his place at the top and at the front of the pack there. Hopefully not. So we'd like to see it a little bit more challenging, even if Max does ultimately win it at the end of the year. Going down, let's go down the top 10 in the Drivers' Championship. Fifth, we have Oscar Piastri. Sixth, Lando Norris. Seventh, George Russell. Eighth, Fernando Alonso. Ninth is Lance Stroll. And 10th is Lewis Hamilton. The seven-time world champion only has 8 points from three races. So that's been a pretty rough start to the year for Lewis Hamilton. Obviously right there. Okay, let's take a quick look now at the Constructors' Championship. Red Bull still on top with 97 points from three Grand Prix. Ferrari 4 points behind with 93. Then it's a bit of a gap till you get back to McLaren, who are currently third in the Constructors with 55, which is more than double than Mercedes, who only have 26, and they are only 1 point ahead of Aston Martin, who have 25. So going down the rest of the Constructors, we have Racing Bulls in sixth, Haas in seventh, they've got 4 points. Williams, Sauber, and Alpine have not scored a single world championship point so far in the season. So that's where we stand right now. Okay, let's before we get into the news itself, let's just go and take a look at the standings in our fantasy league. So here we go. Unfortunately, it looks like the sensors have been in, so this is now not the Scudery F1 Pod Fantasy League. Now this is League 17106414298554. And also, unfortunately, what that means, the sensors have been in and renamed a couple of teams in the top 10 that, you know, they've got generic, also equally, you know, ridiculously difficult names to pronounce. Anyways, well, we'll go down at least the top 10. So I'll just read out the name. I'm not going through these ridiculous generic names. Anyways, holding steady in first place with 684 points, pardon me, Caridura F1. Up a place, or up a couple places, I think. Into second is DJ Bean with 680. Holding steady in third is the Red Beards. Dropping down into fourth is Hamilton, 8-time champions. At 617, we have two teams moving up for a joint tie in fifth place as Tails I Win and the Myths Fits. Dropping down to seventh is Sausage. Moving up to eighth, this is one of the generic teams. I'm not this sure if this was the team formerly known as Super Monkey Death Car. If it is, that's great. If not, it's Brady Reitzman's team at any rate. And Sofa Uch, I think I probably butchered that, up into ninth. And then Kwame Sarpong is in 10th, so moving up into 10th there. So I'm not sure if that was maybe Super Monkey Death Car before that, but like I say, the sensors have been rolling through, and that's going to be kind of tricky the rest of the way. So anyways, it is what it is. Okay, let's jump into the news. And let's recap and break down the action, because I don't think any of us were sitting here on, well, even at the start of yesterday's race, considering once it started, the lights went green. It was Max who was on pole, and, you know, he established himself out front for a couple laps, and it looked like once we kind of got through those first couple of laps, I wouldn't even say we got through that opening phase of the race where all the cars kind of established themselves. We get a bit of a running order going. There was still that bit of scrapping and cars trying to, you know, make some early, you know, overtakes and passes in the race. And, you know, it didn't really get past that initial phase until it looked like Max Verstappen was having some pretty serious problems. And it doesn't really get more serious than a stuck brake, because apparently the stuck brake, which eventually caught fire and forced him out on lap three. I mean, Carlos Sainz made the pass on Max as early as lap two. Max at least was on the radio complaining about the balance of the car, saying that the car started to feel really loose, and it was a really easy pass for Carlos Sainz. Anyways, Max had to say afterwards, quote, "My right rear brake basically stuck from when the lights went off, so the temperature just kept kept on increasing until the point, of course, that it caught fire. I had it that moment after the first lap, but then already the temperature was increasing and increasing. So it just works like a handbrake. But of course, I didn't know that stuff was happening. It just felt the problem was with the car was off. The team could see what was going on, but they didn't know what caused it. So that means that Max's retirement means that ended a run of 43 consecutive races without a retirement, and every single race that he's finished in that run of 43 races have all been in the points. And also his last DNF was also at the Australian Grand Prix back in 2022, so I guess it's all come completely full circle. Max went on to say, quote, "Of course we had a lot of good races in a row, a lot of good reliability. I knew that the day would come that you would end up having a retirement, and unfortunately that day was today. We just had already a very good run of 2 years that is already quite impressive. Of course, you never like to see it happen, but it's more important now that we understand why." He went on to say, "Of course, I'm disappointed with not being able to finish the race because I think we would have had a good shot at winning. The balance felt quite nice on the laps to the grid, and I felt confident, like a good improvement compared to what I felt in the long runs that we did in practice. But yeah, some things you can't control." So it's kind of funny, really, when you think about it. The one thing that kind of lets Max down is one of the lower tech pieces on the car. And I'm saying that, let's keep in context that everything, even the brakes and brake pads and everything on these cars, are very, very high tech and very, very exotic materials. But still, when we see retirements, we don't always see one like this. So it was a little bit unusual, and it'll be interesting to see over the next couple of days if Red Bull divulge a little bit more information and tell us exactly what it was that caused the problem, because it happened very, very quickly. I mean, Max started complaining about it after the first lap. Carlos passes him on lap two. He's out of the race by lap three. He's pulling into the pits, and fire and smoke coming off the back of the car there, the right rear wheel, and that was it. And it was really, really quite an odd sight to see Max Verstappen shortly thereafter walking around the pit lane with a polo shirt on and a hat on, his jeans or whatever it was, and just doing his media stuff there. But it's interesting now, right? Because Max, that 43 run or consecutive run of wins over the or races in the points over the past 43 races, that's really, really impressive stuff. But if you go back just this year and last year, the only two drivers now to beat him are either his teammate Sergio Perez or Carlos Sainz. And of course, Carlos has only won two races in that stretch, last year in Singapore and then this week. And I think this is maybe the plot twist that makes things a little bit more juicy, right? Because Carlos Sainz has lost his seat at Ferrari. That's going to be taken over by Lewis Hamilton for 2025. And there's been all sorts of speculation and rumors going around in recent times. We were talking about it last show on Thursday night with Johnny Herbert, going out and talking about how he believes, or as far as he knows, that a potential deal to send Max Verstappen from Red Bull to Mercedes is all but done. According to Johnny Herbert, they're doing is dotting I's and crossing T's on contracts. And wouldn't that be quite incredible? I mean, we see in the course of less than a calendar year, we see Lewis Hamilton going from Mercedes to Ferrari. That leaves that seat wide open. And then potentially Max going to from Red Bull over to Mercedes. Don't say it won't happen. I mean, it could be rumor. There could be something to it. I mean, none of us were sitting here 2 or 3 months ago thinking that that Lewis was going to jump and hop on over to Maranello from Mercedes. But here we are, and 2024 is continuing to deliver plenty of talking points. But yeah, I mean, wouldn't that be incredible? What with all this uncertainty around the second seat at Red Bull, could we see one or two new drivers there next year? And neither of them could be Max Verstappen or Sergio Perez. It sort of boggles the mind. And it's funny because you don't always see, and of course this still has to come to pass, because now we have one seat at a top team open at Mercedes. And there's been plenty of names linked with that one, and I'm sure that Carlos Sainz must be looking there with interest. And if Max went to Mercedes to partner up with George Russell, what's, you know, what then? Does Carlos end up going to Red Bull? I mean, he's got a connection with that Red Bull organization. I mean, raced for Toro Rosso, back in the day as well. So, I mean, there's that, you know, does that mean that the door is open? I mean, he's certainly, yeah, he's an interesting driver, right? I mean, he doesn't get the headlines that Charles Leclerc does. I mean, Charles is has been the one that's gotten the headlines for all the right reasons, and Carlos has never quite been able to bring it home a lot of the time. But I mean, he's still been able to win races in Ferrari. He's still had some good results for them, and Charles, you know, seems to always get all the headlines for better or worse. I mean, and there's been a lot of worse at Ferrari and for both. Both of them, not just for Carlos and Charles. So very, very interesting things coming up, and we'll have to keep, you know, this silly season sharply in focus as we go through 2024. So talking about Carlos Sainz now, here we are 2 weeks ago, I don't want to say that a person that has been in Formula One for such a long time, like Carlos Sainz, becomes a footnote or an afterthought, but he absolutely was 2 weeks ago after Saudi Arabia, because he unfortunately had appendicitis and he had to have an operation and he's sitting at home recovering. And all of a sudden you have Ollie Bearman who comes in and jumps into Carlos Sainz's car at Jeddah, does a wonderful job, gets into the points on his debut, and everybody's talking about the 18-year-old driver like he's the next greatest thing since sliced bread. And, you know, of course, Nico Hülkenberg was a little bit more realistic and sober around the situation, saying that, Bearman still has to deliver an F2. And if he doesn't, then this will just be a bit of it wouldn't be what he should, he wouldn't be remembered for all that. He wasn't able to do it and then get back into F1, more or less. I'm kind of struggling to remember exactly what Hülkenberg said, but basically what he said is that Bearman needs to get the job done in Formula 2 if he wants to get back to F1 in the future, and that absolutely makes sense. Anyways, I mean, we are, you know, still 2 weeks ago, and we're still, once the novelty, if you want to call it novelty, of Bearman's results in Saudi Arabia runs sort of wears off a little bit, start wondering about whether or not he's going to be back for Australia, whether or not Sainz will be back or not. And absolutely he was. I mean, he said all the right things, that he'd have to wait and see how he was feeling, how he was recovering. But, you know, that's a fairly major surgery to have. And then, less than 2 weeks later, be back in the car for a Grand Prix. And I mean, he looked great out there on Saturday night or Sunday, Australia time. But I mean, he really, really did look good. Anyways, Carlos said afterwards, quote, "I felt really good out there. Of course, a bit stiff, and especially physically, it wasn't the easiest, but I was lucky that I was more or less on my own and I could manage my pace, manage the tires, manage everything. It wasn't the toughest of races of all. Very proud of the team, happy to be in a 1-2 with Charles here. It shows that the hard work pays off. Life sometimes is, it's crazy. What happened at the beginning of the year, then the podium in Bahrain, then the appendix, then the comeback, the win. It's a roller coaster, but I loved it. I'm extremely happy. I think from lap 2, when I was leading, with the pace I had yesterday, I knew I could get it done, especially in clean air. Obviously, the risk of a safety car and a red flag here was always in the back of my mind, but luckily, it was a clean race. A pity for Verstappen, because we would have a very good fight for P1 today. But yeah, I'm happy to take the win. He's had plenty of them," end quote. And absolutely, Max has had plenty of wins. And I think, it's a great story. I think it really makes the season a little bit more interesting. And like I say, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Max. I don't want to take anything away from Red Bull and Honda, because I mean, they really have the best package out there, and they have done for the past couple of years, and that didn't really happen by accident. I mean, Max is driving at such an incredible level, but it just goes to prove that no matter how good you are, occasionally you're going to have a bad day, or in this case, the bad day wasn't down to a mistake that he made, because, you know, let's face it, Max doesn't make very many mistakes when he's behind the wheel of a Formula One car. But this time, a fairly straightforward and low-tech piece of equipment let him down, and let him down quite badly. Could that make a difference at the end of the year for the championship? I think we have to be realistic. I mean, as long as Max is in the car and he's driving, he's on the track, he's going to be the odds-on favorite. I mean, 43 races in a row without a DNF in the points until this past weekend. I mean, that really speaks for itself. And if you look at Max's record last year, I mean, it's just... It's ridiculous how many points this guy has scored. It's ridiculous how good the team has been, and he's going to be the odds-on favorite. Now, I mean, if we see this, and we'll get into this in a moment, because this becomes a bit of an interesting discussion, because there were these comments made about, you know, whether or not Red Bull actually had the pace to win this race on Sunday. Anyways, Sergio Perez says that that Carlos Sainz would have won. He said he absolutely would have won the Australian Grand Prix even if Max was in the race, because they had the better pace and Red Bull just wasn't quite as competitive. I mean, Sergio he was a non-factor on Sunday, and that wasn't anything to do with him. The car just wasn't pacey enough. Anyways, after the race, he was asked by Sky Sports F1 whether or not Sainz would still have beaten Max. He just said, quote, "Absolutely. I think just as a team, we just didn't have the pace today. We didn't have the pace throughout the weekend. We were struggling already from Friday. We never got on top of the management of the tires. We were struggling early on. We could see that Ferrari, McLaren were a step ahead of us. I think we just couldn't get the balance in a window, and there's some work to do for the coming races," end quote. So, you know, here we go. So that's one thing that that Sergio Perez has to say. Anyways, Red Bull senior advisor Helmut Marko said that afterwards that had Max stayed in the race, it would have been completely different. He told Sky Germany, quote, "I spoke to Max and he said despite the problems, he kept up with Sainz's pace relatively easy. With Max in the race, the outcome would have been completely different," end quote. So we know that that Max and Helmut Marko have a pretty close relationship. But, you know, honestly, on this one, I think I'm going to go with Sergio Perez's verdict. I mean, he's the guy that's a current racing driver. He was the one that has, you know, in theory, the same equipment as Max Verstappen. And he was saying that they just didn't have it today. Although it was interesting, right? Because there was a time where Perez, after pit stops and things like that, he was carving his way through the field. And I mean, he got around George Russell quite easily. And George over the comms back to the pit wall said, boy, this car is like a rocket ship. And once Perez got past him, he was zipping along and just pulling away from Russell very, very easily. But when it came to catching up the two McLarens of Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris and the two Ferraris, the pace wasn't quite there. So Christian Horner weighed in and said that Sergio Perez actually picked up some damage to his Red Bull when he passed Fernando Alonso during the course of the race. So he lost a fair amount of downforce. Anyways, Horner had to say, quote, "I mean, he's probably not aware of it, but he picked up a bit of damage as soon as he passed or whilst he was passing Fernando. He lost a significant amount of downforce from the floor of the car, so we just need to get the car back to understand exactly what's caused that. As soon as you get that, then your tire dig gets worse, and we are just not as good at the end of the stints, which is a bit of unusual trait for our car, so we need to understand that. I have to congratulate Carlos Sainz today. I mean, after going through surgery, what a great performance by him, and of course, the Ferrari team today," end quote. So, that's kind of interesting. You would think that Perez would have mentioned that if he felt like that was an issue with his car, but Perez was basically saying they just didn't have the pace the entire weekend. And, you know, obviously Christian Horner and Helmut Marko know a lot about what's going on with the cars too. But again, in this case, I think we're going to defer a little bit more to Sergio Perez's opinion and verdict on the matter. And we'll see what happens in the couple of the races that are coming up here pretty quick. Anyways, time for a quick break. To have a quick message from our sponsors. Please don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the show. Time now to talk about McLaren, because Lando Norris coming home P3 and his teammate Oscar Piastri, the Australian, came home in P4. So Norris actually feels like he lost out on second place to Charles Leclerc because he didn't manage to take advantage of the undercut during the pit stops. So Leclerc was actually outqualified by Norris, and Norris eventually fell behind after the first round of pit stops because both Leclerc and Oscar Piastri pitted earlier than Norris did. So anyways, Leclerc did manage to stay out ahead of Norris, and then Norris was actually swapped around with his teammate Piastri at one point because he was actually quite pacey, and at one point later in the race, Norris was putting in some faster laps. Yeah, I think he was about 3.5-4 seconds thereabouts behind Leclerc at that point. I was kind of wondering, are we going to see a late charge here from Lando Norris to get up on the gearbox of Charles Leclerc and perhaps very late in the race make a challenge for P2? Didn't actually come to pass because the fastest lap of the race actually was set by Charles Leclerc in the end. So he did just enough to stay away and in front of Lando Norris, and never actually had to defend his position too resolutely because Norris actually never got close enough. Anyways, after the race, Norris was thinking about it and just recounting what happened during the race. He said, quote, "I think when you take the Red Bull out of it, I would say I think our pace has been good all weekend. We put things together very nicely yesterday and showed a good long run pace on Friday. So I wouldn't have said we had no chance. I didn't expect us to be competing against the Ferraris today. And I think our pace was not as good as Carlos's, but probably better than Charles's. But being honest, maybe we missed out a little bit on an opportunity to be P2 today. For us to say that, it's a good sign. I think a good positive for the whole team. A good boost. We didn't leave anything on the table, but the lap we were going to undercut, he boxed. So you have to go off and then do a kind of a different strategy. We were close in the second stint, and I think if I boxed, I would have undercut. I missed that opportunity, so we always think that if we did one lap earlier, but it's tough to make all those decisions at the time. It can easily go wrong. At the same time, there are always some consequences of doing so. So there you go, but not necessarily a bad result for Lando Norris, first podium of the year. So Oscar Piastri obviously wanted to get a good result, being in front of his home fans and one of two Australians in the race, Daniel Ricciardo being the other one. We'll talk about him in a few minutes. And anyways, going back to Piastri, when he was asked after the race what he thought about the order coming off of the pit wall to switch with his teammate Lando Norris, who was much, much quicker than he was at that point in the race, Piastri had to say, quote, "For me, it was completely fair. He qualified in front of me yesterday. I went a bit longer on the first stop and he was catching me and was quicker at that point of the race. At that point, I was keeping with Leclerc and Lando was catching both of us. So I was honestly kind of hoping he'd just get past me and go and get Charles. Of course, at home, I would love to have been able to stay in third, but for me, that was completely fair," end quote. So there you go. I think that, good teammanship there and good teamwork and Piastri saying the classy thing. But boy, did he ever get quite an ovation at the end of the race when he came around that final corner to the checkered flag, standing ovation for all the drivers. But Piastri certainly get a very, very boisterous welcome at the finish line at the end of the race. And I really like that that combination of drivers, of Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. I mean, the McLaren's good, but it's not quite there yet, is it? But I mean, I don't want to take anything away from them too much, because a P3 and a P4 is a very, very good outing for them. at this point in the season. I still think when it comes to the running order that it's going to be Red Bull, obviously, then it's Ferrari. And I think that McLaren is ahead of Mercedes at this point in the season, and Aston Martin as well. So they're sitting in a nice spot, but they've got a bit of work to do if they're going to catch up to the Ferraris. But I mean, Lando wasn't really all that far behind. So, you know, just sort of, I'm not even thinking it's even really arm's length. It was, you know, just not quite, he wasn't quite able to get close enough to make that challenge to fight with Charles Leclerc late in the race, but who knows, maybe their time will come. Okay, so now we're going to talk about Fernando Alonso and George Russell. Right at the very end of the race, we had a virtual safety car because George Russell had a very, very big crash and ended up, you know, tilted over on the side of his car, and boy, was it kind of frightening afterwards when you hear the almost the panic in George Russell's voice when he's flipped up on the side of the car, the way that it came, you know, after the car hit the wall, came out of the gravel and kind of came to a rest on its side, that he's saying, red flag, red flag, red flag. And you can almost, you know, it must be a horrible feeling, you know, knowing that there's so many other Formula One cars. I guess how many would have been still in the race at that point? 17 other cars still on the track after, no, 18 cars still in the pardon me, racing, because only Lewis and Max had retired at that point, much, much earlier in the race. And George not knowing where anybody might be and whether or not he's got enough time to get out of the car. But fortunately, you know, they did deploy the virtual safety car. Russell was able to safely get out of the car, but that was a bit of a scary one. Anyways, after the race, Fernando Alonso was given a 20-second penalty for the role that that he played in that that crash. Anyways, there's it's interesting when you look at it, because we didn't really see it happen, obviously, in the race itself. We just saw the aftermath of it. We see George Russell's car flipped up on the side and the wheels kind of dangling there. It looked really, really nasty. But, you know, fortunately, he was on the radio right away to say that he was okay. And that was transmitted over TV to the audience, knowing that he was okay. It was just getting those cars slowed down that were still on the track at full throttle doing what they were doing. And fortunately, that did. Anyways, Fernando said that he was disappointed because when, you know, in the penalty, that is, but when you went back afterwards, and they were pretty quick getting the replays up on the television screen, their feed, I think they did a pretty, pretty good job at doing that. And you see Fernando going around, and the telemetry actually proved this after the fact, that he braked or he lifted off the throttle, you know, some 100 meters earlier than usual. We'll talk about the telemetry and the steward's decision afterwards, but you could kind of see that as well, because George had a lot of speed. He was really pushing him, and he had a couple of little, you know, little looks. I wouldn't say that he actually got to the point in those preceding laps to, you know, actually get around Fernando, but he was definitely looking. He did stick his nose out a couple of times at a couple of different corners, and let's face it, that's not going to scare the likes of Fernando Alonso. But anyways, George was really pushing, and my immediate reaction was, oh, here we go. This is Singapore again. It's Montreal again. It's George late in the race trying to do George Russell things, and just got it, you know, he just lost it and put it into the wall. But it is interesting when you see those and you look at the telemetry. Anyways, let's hear what Fernando Alonso had to say. He said after the race, quote, George caught me quickly. I knew he was coming. Then he was in DRS range for 5 or 6 laps, so I was just doing qualifying laps to stay ahead. I wanted to maximize my exit speed from turn 6 to defend against him. That's what any racing driver would do, and I didn't feel it was dangerous. It's disappointing to get a penalty from the stewards for what was hard but fair racing. Still, I'm glad that George is okay. It was not nice to see his car in the middle of the track. And so that's what he said right away after the race, or in the immediately after the race. Afterwards, he went on to social media, because, you know, who doesn't love getting onto social media for a good rant? Anyways, Fernando went onto social media afterwards saying, quote, a bit surprised by the penalty at the end of the race regarding how we should approach the corners and or how we should drive the race cars. At no point do we want to do anything wrong at these speeds. I believe that without gravel on that corner or any other corner in the world, we would never even be investigated. In F1, with over 20 years of experience with epic dual duels like Imola 2005-2006, Brazil 2023, changing racing lines, sacrificing entry speed to have good exits from corners is part of the art of motorsport. We never drive at 100% every race lap and every corner. We save fuel, tires, brakes, so being responsible for not making every lap the same is a bit surprising, end quote. Aston Martin team boss Mike Crack said that he was also surprised by the Stewart's verdict, went on to say that that Aston Martin wouldn't appeal that decision. He just said it was he was surprised to see Fernando get dropped down to P8 with that penalty after the race, but he basically said that they're going to accept the Stewart's decision and leave it at that. Crack went on to say that he felt in general that the Australian Grand Prix Sunday was a positive day for them. They got 12 championship points out of it and felt that both Fernando and his teammate Lance Stroll had a good outing, and they converted their grid position into points and did so on two different strategies for the day. Anyways, so let's take a look here at some of the telemetry and some of the stuff that the stewards have to say. Let me just pull up my notes here. So the stewards for this weekend were Tim Meyer, Matteo Perini, Johnny Herbert. We talked about him a little bit earlier. Of course, Johnny was a former Formula One driver, and Matthew Selle. So they heard from George Russell, Fernando Alonso, as well as team representatives from both Mercedes and Aston Martin. And they reviewed a lot of data, video telemetry, team radio, and team telemetry data. And they used all this different information to come to the decision that they did, which was obviously the 22nd penalty to Fernando at the end of the race. In the explanation that they issued afterwards, said, quote, car 63, George Russell, was following car 14, Fernando Alonso, approximately 0.5 seconds behind as the cars approached turn 6. Alonso explained to the stewards that he intended to approach turn 6 differently, lifting earlier and with less speed into the corner to get a better exit. Russell explained to the stewards that from his perspective, Alonso's maneuver was erratic, took him by surprise, and caused him to close distance unusually fast. And with the resulting lower downforce at the apex of the corner, he lost control and crashed at the exit of the corner. There was no contact between the cars. They also went on to say, quotes, the telemetry showed that Alonso lifted significantly more than 100 meters earlier than he ever had going into that corner during the race. He also braked very slightly at a point that he did not usually brake, although the amount of brake was so slight that it was not the main reason for his car slowing, and he downshifted at a point he never usually downshifted. He then upshifted again and accelerated to the corner before lifting again to make the corner. Alonso explained that while his plan was to slow earlier, he got it slightly wrong and had to take extra steps to get back up to speed. Nonetheless, this maneuver created considerable unusual closing speed between the cars. End quote. So the stewards, they went on to obviously deliberate what Fernando did. They found him to be in the wrong, and found that Fernando was against Article 33.4 of the FIA sporting regulations. And just because I'm sure most of us don't know what that means or what that entails. So Article 33.4 of the FIA sporting regulations states, quote, at no time may a car be driven unnecessarily slowly, erratically, or in a manner which could be deemed potentially dangerous to other drivers or any other person. End quote. So there you go. That's what they decided to do. And I don't know. I'm a little bit not sure how to take this one. Like, it kind of really looks that, he obviously admitted that he did, and then he was immediately on the radio afterwards back to the pit saying that he felt he had like some problems with the throttle. And I don't know, that kind of to me felt like almost like he was trying to find an excuse for it, you know, like to sort of back it up. And like, although his, his engineer came back, yeah, we're looking at it or something to that effect. But I think what was interesting too was I was looking through my timeline on X earlier today, and somebody had found this old replay or some highlights of the 2003 European Grand Prix from the Nürburgring. I can't remember exactly which turn it is, but if you go down to the hairpin at the Dunlop curve, down at the very bottom of the track there, and they come out, they go up to up the hill into a left-right combo. Well, they go around the back of the circuit, so they go up the hill, it starts to slope upwards, and then they turn into the left there. And it's a fantastic place to go and watch a race, actually. That's where I've sat before when I've been to the Nürburgring in the past. Anyways, you can see the cars going up into that left-hander. And Coulthard, David Coulthard, that is, was following Fernando. So this is back in 2003. And it appeared that he lifted off fairly early in that one, too. Coulthard had to put the brakes on and ends up on the grass and then sliding through the grass and bouncing through the grass into the gravel trap. And it was kind of interesting because the insinuating sentiment behind that one was, well, Fernando basically has a history of doing things like that, even that being over 20 years ago. But still, it was interesting to see, and kind of gave a little bit of a context. But I mean, Fernando was pretty clear in his in what he did, and he explained what he was trying to do, because I think my initial reaction was exactly what happened after Singapore. George was pushing hard late in the race and just cooked it. He lost it, put it into the wall, and that was that. But it looked obviously, immediately that there was something more to it than what we first saw, right? So I don't know. To think that these drivers drive each and every lap throughout an entire race 100% the same, that's not true. So I agree with that, with Fernando's take. But I don't know. It's a little bit suspicious. I mean, it's 100 meters different, which at those speeds is still the blink of an eye. But they really. Yeah, when you think about it, when you look at the distances into the corners, they got the 100 meters or 150, 150 meter, markers to help them gauge their breaking points into these corners. So, like 100 meters earlier than usual, that is significant, right? And I accept Fernando's explanation, because that would help him in the subsequent corners and help him to be faster if later in the race, at least, or in that lap. That was his explanation, but I don't know. It's an interesting one. You have to give the drivers the opportunity to defend, but does that really sort of fall into the category of erratic? No, but certainly it does fall into the category that the stewards, I think, and this is where they really nailed him on, was the driving unnecessarily slow, because of course these cars don't have brake lights on the back. So if George was expecting him to brake, and even though 100 meters is a blink of an eye, I mean, these drivers, I swear, they could probably drive around these courses, these racetracks with their eyes closed. And I think that George legitimately was caught out, because he was probably expecting Fernando to brake a second or two later, and then all of a sudden he wasn't, and has to take evasive action, loses the downforce, and the rest, as they say, is history. Although it was a bit of a scary moment, could have been a lot nastier. Unfortunately, it wasn't. Okay, so let's talk about Mercedes. So Toto Wolff, team principal of Mercedes, says the weekend it was brutal, and he wasn't able to find any positives out of it. Anyways, Toto had to say after the race, quote, "There were times in the race where we were massively lacked pace, and then there were times at the end when you compare like for like, we were doing okay. Still not where we want to be, but you could see in the second stint, Fernando on the medium tire, we couldn't come anywhere close. The lap times looked a second off the McLarens. Then suddenly in the last stint, when we went for it, not to worry too much, the lap times were competitive, not a match for science, but it was much better. So clearly we started the season in the belief that this car is better than last year. Then you look at last year and you look at these guys, Leclerc crashed out and Sainz was fourth and got relegated to the outside of the top 10 because of a penalty. Now they are 40 seconds ahead of us. So obviously on one side, I want to punch myself on the nose, but on the other side, it is also a testimony of that when you get things right, you can turn it around pretty quickly, and you've just got to continue to believe. But at the moment, it is a very, very tough time. Tough to take, super tough. I would be lying if I would say at the moment, I feel positive about the situation, optimistic, but you just need to overcome the negative thoughts and say we will turn this around. But today it feels very, very, very brutal," end quote. So a lot of frustration coming through from Toto Wolff there, and absolutely, I mean, they're down to the constructors. They're an afterthought. I mean, sadly, I mean, it's Red Bull, Ferrari, McLaren. Those are the top three teams, pardon me, after three races this season. And, you know, I keep saying, oh, you know, don't worry about it. Mercedes will turn it around. They're too good not to. But I'm starting to question that, you know, that expectation that I've set for them, because they just haven't been on it for quite some time, and not just this year, going back to last year and beyond. I mean, this current set of technical regulations has just not been good for Mercedes, and you know, just based on their record in the past, that they've always been able to pull something out when the chips have been down, but they haven't been able to do this for quite a while, and or at least you know, turn it around in the way that we've become accustomed to. And that really is quite unusual. Lewis Hamilton, on the other hand, on the same hand, has said that the start of this season in 2024 is basically the worst start to a season that he's ever had. The seven-time world champion said, quote, "This is the worst season start of a season I've ever had. And it's worse than 2009, I think," end quote. Then he was asked about his very, very brief outing in the Australian Grand Prix on Sunday. He replied to the media, quote, "I think it was fine. I had a new soft because I didn't get to Q3 and it was undercut some of the drivers. The pace was okay. It was nothing special, but I was catching. I was slightly quicker than the cars ahead. And then obviously the engine failed. Surprisingly, I feel pretty good. Really, I think I'm just trying to keep things in perspective. It could be so much worse. I'm really grateful to be here. I've really enjoyed my time in Australia. I'm still enjoying working with the team. Of course, I'd love to be fighting for wins and actually finishing races. That's never a great feeling when you come over this way and you don't even see half of the race. But what I know is that we will bounce back. We will eventually get there. We just have to continue to chip away at it. It's easy to get caught up in the moment and be focused on this one thing, but the bigger picture is definitely the focus. Also, just realizing that you can't control everything, because you get frustrated because you don't have control. I'm not happy, but I'm going to have a great day tomorrow," end quote. So there you go. And Lewis, of course, did not make it out of Q2, which was quite shocking, and quite a ways down on all the contenders in the Drivers' Championship, which is very un-Lewis-like. Okay, a couple more stories here before I wrap it up tonight. So Danny Ricciardo, not the greatest or most impressive weekend. You know, we keep talking about Ricciardo's potential replacement for Sergio Perez at Red Bull next year in that second Red Bull car. And he said that Ricciardo said that he's collecting secret information as people start to, you know, ask whether or not, you know, he's still got what it takes to be competitive in Formula One. So talking in the media pen after the race, he said, quote, "I feel like the frustration I kind of put aside for today. I let that go last night and I didn't end up breaking anything. I felt like some objects were going to get smashed after qualifying, but maybe there's a bit of calm with this age. I don't know. But anyways, I kind of knew what's done is done and tried to make the most of today. And obviously it's nice that there were moments in the race where I did have the pace and I was able to show, okay, I can still get some good stints in there, but it was still good to get the laps. There's things through the race where I'll mark. We have, let's say, a button on this wheel that I can use as a reference to say, oh, that lap, I felt something there. I'm not giving away secret information, but it's just things so I remember to tell the engineers after. So there's a few points through the race that I marked, let's say, and it's good to get the understanding, the data gathering and all that. And obviously the weekend, I would have loved to have gone better, but I think we've just got to keep our eyes on the prize. It hasn't been the best three races to start the season for sure, and especially kind of the preparation I had coming into the season. It's definitely not where I expected to be, but it's certainly not something that we're going to get like rattled by or anything. We've just got to stay on course, and I'm sure we'll find it," end quote. So that's a bit of an interesting one, because as far as I knew, and you know, take this with a pinch of salt, but you know, I thought that there was already, among all the buttons and dials and displays and everything that they have on these incredible steering wheels that they have in Formula One cars, which are just a technological wonder as far as I'm concerned, because you've got all this stuff that that you can do on the car, from brake balance to radios to setting your differentials and all these different things. engine modes, you know, DRS, etc. I thought that there was the button to mark things and the telemetry. I thought that it was already there. So, or I thought that was well known that button existed. So I'm not sure if Danny Ricciardo is referring to that or perhaps something else. I just kind of found that like a bit of a peculiar comment. I think that he's obviously pretty aware that you know, the first three races of the season haven't gone all that great. Looked like he was going to make it into Q2 on Saturday, and then he had a lap time deleted, so that fast lap actually didn't count. Doesn't make it out of Q1, and you know, he was kind of in the back third of the pack the entire race, so not where he wants to be, and he obviously knows that. I mean, we read it out in that quote just there when he was addressing the media after the race on Sunday, but there you go. You know, can he get it done? Again, you know, I love a good underdog story. That's why, you know, I'm all for Carlos Sainz to see what he's going to do this season. But Danny Ricciardo, too. I've always had a bit of a soft spot for the guy. I like him. I think he's, you know, previously he was a fun driver to watch. And he certainly, what was it? How many race wins does he have to his credit? 7, 8, something like that. A bunch of podiums. You know, the inventor of the, well, maybe not the inventor of the shoey, but introduced the shoey to Formula One, which is a little bit kind of nasty, but I mean, he made it his own and it's kind of a fun thing, but anyways, so will we ever see the shoey again in Formula One with Danny Ricciardo? Who knows, but certainly he's going to have to do a lot more to win that seat at Red Bull for next year. Okay, final story of the day before we wrap it up. So Sauber was €5,000 euros for, you know, as they still have continued problems with their pit stops. So they had you know, very lengthy stops for Valtteri Bottas in Bahrain, and then Zhou Guan Yu in Jeddah, and the team said that they were going to make containment modifications. That's what it was. That was the phrase, containment modifications for Melbourne, to really prevent these sorts of things happening again. Anyway, so at the race at the Australian Grand Prix of Melbourne, Bottas had another problem in the pits that cost him 28 seconds, and then that kind of really ruined his afternoon and any shot that he might get into the points, because he was running ahead of both Kevin Magnussen and Nico Hulkenberg in the Haas cars. Of course, the two Haases came home in P9 and P10, so Bottas has to be pretty disappointed about that, because he would think if he was running in front of them that at that point in the race that there should have been a pretty good chance for him to get into the points as well before it was all over. So certainly an opportunity lost. So this time a wheel nut popped out of the wheel gun and rolled into the fast lane, and that could have come into the path of other cars in the pit lane. So that ended up being reported to the FIA stewards on safety grounds. Anyway, so the stewards looked into it and they decreed, quote, the team lost control of a wheel nut during a pit stop, causing a potentially dangerous situation in the pit lane during the race, end quote. And then they slapped them with a €5,000 fine. Anyways, it is what it is. And then they also have, they don't have a team principal. They have the racing director, I think it is. Anyways, well, I mean, they'll have Andreas Seidel, who will be the team principal when it becomes Audi, but they've gone from Alfa Romeo, which was all just a marketing thing. They've always been Sauber, but they're kind of in this weird kind of in-between phase this year, next year, before they officially become the Audi works team in 2026. Okay, well, there we go. That's going to be it for the show tonight. Thank you all for joining in, and glad for once we had something to talk about besides a Max Verstappen win. I hope we're not doing this next time after the next, or I hope we are doing it with somebody else other than Max Verstappen. I should clarify that after the next race. It would just continue to make the season more, you know, interesting and have other things to talk about. But we'll wait and see. Anyways, if you want to get in touch, by all means, send an email at scooteryf1pod@gmail.com. Slide into the DMs on X at scooteryf1pod. And if you enjoy the pod and you want to support what we're doing here, head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you enjoy your podcasts, and leave a 5-star rating or review. Excuse me, I didn't choke on that because I'm getting emotional, but perhaps I am. Anyways, leaving a rating and a kind review is the best way to support the show. It only takes a few moments of your time to do so. Anyways, that's my hint. That is the notification for me. I'm starting to get tired. It's almost 11 o'clock here on a Sunday night in beautiful Vancouver, Canada. Thank you one and all for listening to the show. Hope you enjoyed the races weekend. Have a great week. Be back in a couple of days on Thursday for the regular weekly show. And until then, have a great week. We'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.